Hello and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we've ventured out of London for a countryside stroll. It's an honour for me, this one. Someone I look up to in the space of broadcast. She's been a dominant force on our screens, anchoring some of the country's most historical moments in sporting history. Not only is she a mother, a wife, she's a former athlete, a broadcaster, author, writer, and fellow podcaster. The word professionalism can be bounded around lightly. However, this woman encapsulates everything that word defines. There are greats and there are the greats. And Gabby Logan is one of them. Gabby, welcome to the Monday Mile.
Hello, thank you. And I can't tell you how embarrassing it was hearing that while walking down a road where people know me. I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope my neighbours can't hear that fantastically brilliant introduction, but also making me blush. How are you, Amy?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. Yeah, very good.
Are you much of a walker?
Yeah, we do a lot of walking. We've got three dogs, so you kind of have to. You've got three dogs.
They're not small dogs either.
No, they're big dogs. Three different breeds, but three dogs who like, well, actually the oldest one's 12, so he doesn't go out anymore because he's got kind of rickety hips and stuff. So it's the other two. But we've got a 9-month-old standard poodle who has got so much energy, which is great. I'm looking forward to him being able to run because at the moment you can do a little jog, but you're not supposed to really run with them until they're a year old, till their hips are fully developed. So I do like running with dogs as well.
Have you got one of those sort of contraptions I've seen? You can attach it.
I'm going to get one of those because previously, well, around here, we live quite rural. And once we get off the kind of roads and onto the paths and the trails, he would run alongside me. It's quite good to kind of have one of those ready in case other dogs are coming and things like that.
So. I've also heard it can enhance your PB drastically.
Well, we had on the Midpoint podcast, we had a guy who runs the country's kind of top club and has
the proof
that the times do improve because you're kind of being pulled along.
Yeah.
You know, you wear those with a pair of those, I won't give the brand, enormous trainers that are synonymous with world records.
Oh, yes, I've seen those.
They might have the word flight in them.
Yeah, they're quite luminous,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, if you wear a pair of those and you have a dog harness, I think, you know, world records
are
yours.
We need to get on that for the Landmarks half, which I believe
we're
both doing.
Oh, you're not doing Landmarks as well, are you?
I am.
I'm going to be 30 minutes behind you at least.
I don't know about that. I can't.
40,
I can't,
maybe now.
I can't get enough of it. So we first met at Swotty last year and then the Great North Run. However, you may not remember this. So my first Olympics was in 2014.
Right.
You sent me and the sort of team squad a good luck message.
Yes, yes, I do remember that, yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I was chuffed.
Oh.
Now, your lifestyle in the media is incredibly fast. So how important is routine in your life?
I think for me, I personally have always been a routine type of girl, you know.
Yeah.
I get the best out of me and people around me, I think, you know, when there's some kind of routine going on. And I like to plan. So, you know, every week I always kind of joke about kind of like I even factor in my exercise and everything else on a Sunday. I look and go, right, where am I training? What am I doing with, you know, where, when? And there's not a lot of spontaneity in the week, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be occasionally an evening is free and you go, oh, let's go watch a film or let's go. Like Friday night, we just decided to drive and watch Northampton Saints against Quins. It was just a random, you know, it might be something like that.
I can imagine that that's sort of a treat, having that time.
Just
to be sporadic.
Something. Yeah, exactly. To do something that is just a bit more spontaneous. When you've had a life as a sports person, you're used to that kind of, you know, the routine and juggling, you know what it was like with school, you're doing your A-levels, you're training. So you've got to manage your time really well. And that's one of the great gifts, I think, from being a child sports person.
Yeah.
So I think because of my child experiences with sport and schoolwork, that kind of then led on to the rest of my life. So when I got to university, I couldn't believe how many hours I had. I was like, why is everybody like, you know, struggling to get their essays in? We've got hours and hours in the week. And I would just be like, right, I'm going to join this club, do this. So I suppose I've always enjoyed cramming it in.
Full schedule.
Yeah.
So on a day like today, it is conveniently Monday.
Yeah.
Were you up at the crack of dawn to get a workout?
I was up about 6:15, this morning, which in wintertime is worse than summer. 6:15 in summertime
is
so gorgeous.
Hard, isn't
it's
it?
Dark. Oh. And, you know, my alarm went off. And it always shocks me on a Monday morning. When your alarm goes off, you kind of can't remember why your alarm's going off, you know, and you go, what am I doing? My first words today were, just get out of bed and do it, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would say. And Kenny was like, what? Because I woke him up with those words. And it was a friend yesterday, I was doing a bit of cold water swimming, and she was saying she just read his book, and his kind of mantra with exercise is just get on, just do it, put that first foot in front. And I love, you know, it's not a hardship for me in the sense that I love training, but obviously you've got to get out of bed, you know, put your kit on. And once I get downstairs there and the dogs have said good morning to me, I just want to get on and do it. And I prefer getting, if it's a walk or a run or whatever, you know, training, I prefer doing it early if I can. But actually walking, to be honest, has become more of a social thing rather than an exercise thing, because a lot of my girlfriends locally have got dogs and, you know, I'll try and hook up with them, or, you know, I'll go out with Kenny, even, you know, try and utilise the kids, you know, kind of time by going for a walk. So I kind of treat that less like a chore. It's more of a treat, really, I think.
It's social. I quite like a social gym session, you know, and then it doesn't feel like like the chore.
If you tie it in with,
Now, you've moved around quite a lot as a youngster. Now, working in an ever-changing environment, one minute you're anchoring the World Cup out in Australia, the next day you're rocking up in Budapest to host the athletics. That, Gabby, is mental. Do you think having that upbringing with that movement has helped you adapt? And
yeah, I think it does. My dad was a footballer, so, you know, he changed clubs. We moved around, we moved cities, we moved countries. And I think all of that, it kind of gives you a sense of change is good, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of kids fear change, actually, you know, and I see that with my own kids who've lived in the house that we're in now for longer than I lived anywhere in my whole life, I think, until now, you know. So I'm always kind of wary that they've, so I try and, you know, mix things up a bit, because I think it is good to move school and to kind of meet new people. And when I was a kid, that was, sorry, it's leaf blower central around here today.
Nice.
this house here is just being done. This house here has got his leaf blower on. So,
it's all going on out in the sticks.
I mean, I always think leaf blowing at the time of year is like literally the most, is it Sisyphean task, you know, where you just basically might as well be kind of blowing them into the air. And
it's
then
kind
back
of pointless, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think all of that helped me become quite adaptable, I would say, and appreciate change as opposed to fear it.
Do you get a kick out of work weeks like that where you're just on the go and it's
does it feel like
survival, or is it how do you associate
I think
manage?
Because my working life is so irregular and I'm used to that, so I don't have a typical day. You know, when you get those magazine articles where they ask you what's your typical day, I'm not doing the one show all this morning, or, you know, I haven't got a typical day. So those periods where, say, in the summer I was traveling for 3 weeks doing football and athletics are kind of so intense but really exciting, because I love the sport, I love the people I'm working with, I genuinely kind of mentally get prepared for it in a kind of fitness way, because, you know, it's different kind of energy that you need. And then you go into a period where it works totally different, you know, and you're much more daily traveling around the place, doing different, you know, different things, or working from home, doing podcasts, what, you know, whatever it is. So I do look forward to those periods away. I used to dread them a bit when the kids were little, because I used to feel kind of like I was typical kind of motherly guilt of feeling like, oh God, I'm, you know, I should be at home and I'm in China for 3 weeks to the Olympics or whatever it was. But actually now the kids are, you know, they're 18, they're adults. They're not bothered where I am. So I really embrace them, actually.
Yeah, that's definitely got to make it a bit easier on the guilt front.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Paris
They're
Olympics,
like, off you go, Mum, we'll watch you on the telly.
Next summer,
maybe.
They're hoping to get over to, yeah, exactly. Where have you been? What have you been doing? the Olympics, obviously, is in Paris next year. I'm hoping they're going to get over for a few days. Not because, you know, they're going to be desperately missing me, but it'd be really great to kind of relive that family experience we had in London, because I was working every day in the London Olympics, but Kenny would bring them over to watch different things every day. My first attempt to get tickets for the London Olympics was the most unsuccessful thing I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't get any tickets in the first ballot. So I had a different strategy the second time. Instead of going for like all the, you know, the ace category one tickets, I just went for things that I didn't think people would want.
Were you completely
wrong? I was
wrong
totally successful.
That. Oh, really?
So they ended up going to watch a real kind of like smorgasbord of sport. So they saw, but they loved it. They saw weightlifting, you know, they saw some diving, they saw a bit of track and field, they saw like lots of para sport. So it was really great because they got a kind of real mix of things. So
a mix of everything.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to your broadcast career, you get a lot of plaudits when it comes to your ability to swap between the sports. So going from football to athletics to rugby. How do you manage and tackle that? And prep all at the same time.
See, I prefer it when they're in chunks. What's hard is a weekend, which I was doing a lot of URC last year for BBC Wales, and the URC rugby is on a Friday night, and then I'd be doing like women's football on a Saturday. That's harder when you're doing like over the weekend, you know, doing two different sports, because it's just the pace of things, you know, and just the energy of the sports is so different. You kind of get into the rhythm of things. Like when you do the Six Nations, I'm doing loads of rugby and you're into the rhythm of rugby.
Yeah.
And if I have to do a match of the day or something, I guess I watch the sport in a totally different way. It's weird. You kind of, have to adapt really quickly. So I prefer it when it is in chunks and you can kind of prep in a big chunk. The three main sports I do are athletics, as you said, rugby and football. So most of the time, even if I'm not doing football for a while, I'm always listening, always watching, always kind of taking note of things that are going on. So I never come to it kind of completely cold.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like I suddenly... Oh, right, you're going to do the darts this week, Gabby. You know what I mean?
Kind of, so random.
Yeah, so if I kind of like, if I knew something was coming up, I'd be keeping more of an eye on it. And I guess when you enjoy it, that helps, doesn't it? It's not a hardship at all. And I live in a house of people who want to watch sport, so that also helps.
Yeah, I can imagine that really does. Is there any moments in particular within your broadcast career that stand out? Because for me, on the outside, there's one in particular. And it was your sign-off at the Women's Euros. Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, not word for word, although it is, as I wrote in the morning on the way there, I've just done this great, you know, we'd been involved in this great tournament, right, for a few weeks. Obviously, that was the final day. Whatever happened, it was the final day of the tournament. And I suddenly had this moment in the back of the cab on the way to Wembley where I was like, oh my God, England could win this today. And that's enormous. And it was just this wash of kind of like, history just kind of like hit me in the face. You know, I was sitting in the back of the cab thinking of all the times I've worked on women's football and all the different kinds. And then I thought, I've got to jot something down just in case it happens, because I don't want to just be, you know, oh, wasn't that amazing? Goodbye. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to just sign off with something that felt too kind of, I don't know, inconsequential, I suppose. So I quickly jotted these words down. And then I got into work at Wembley, and the exec producer is a guy called Mark Cole, who's a good friend. And I said to him, I just showed him the words and I just said, if England win, this is what I'm going to say. Are you happy with that? I kind of needed a reassurance, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he would just put his thumb up at me, like kind of that. And then that was the end of it. And then obviously it went the right way for England. And I got to sign off with what I hope was a reflection of the game. But also what I wanted was a kind of a bit of a rallying cry. Do you know what I mean? So that people could see that this is the start of something really big. So I'm professionally proud of that moment because I think it reflected the enormity of the occasion.
It was... iconic and without a doubt is and was the start of transcending women's sport further. I actually wrote down what you said.
Oh gosh.
You think it's all over, but it's only just begun. Those are words of power.
Yeah, and I feel like actually what's happened since those Euros has kind of reflected that, hasn't it? You know, that obviously the Lionesses themselves going on to a World Cup final the following year, and you know, the WSL having increased attendances, increased viewing figures, increased levels of deals and brands and sponsorship. But also, I think, other women's sport, you know, because we had an England netball, obviously, win the final of the World Cup this year as well.
Yeah, that was huge.
And that got a lot of coverage, you know, relative to its previous coverage. Because it's all small steps, isn't it? You know, I think if you start comparing it the whole time with men's sport, then you're just going to feel like you're losing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you've got to compare almost year on year, or you've got to compare how the sport was 10 years ago. And look at that development, that progress. And it's not just, as I say, it's not just football. You know, it's important that a lot of access to other women's sports is increased as well.
You're known for being quite competitive. Where do you think that comes from?
I think probably growing up with an international footballer father was probably part of it. I don't think he did it with any kind of malice, or I don't think he did it to try and engender a feeling of competitiveness. But my dad was definitely the root of all that as kids. There were four in total, and three of us were born within 3 years of each other. So we were kind of like a little sporting team already.
A strong unit.
Yeah, and so he would encourage us after dinner to play sport all the time. So it'd be in the garden, put some jumpers down for nets, or, you know, whatever it was we were doing. And inevitably, one of us would end up in tears, you know, because nobody likes losing. And my mum would be like, oh, Terry! But he didn't care, because, you know, that's where the background he came from. So I think there was a bit of that. And I think when you've got siblings who are all sporty, and you just, that competition goes into everything else, doesn't it? Even the games you play in the car on long trips, or, you know what I mean? It's just, you're just always kind of competing.
Do you think that's crossed over into your work life and getting into an industry that is tough and is savage, and particularly when you started, there weren't many females
in the game. It probably allowed me to, now we've got a decision to make, folks, before I answer that question.
Ooh.
We can go two hills.
Yeah.
We can go up this hill here.
Yes.
And through a nice little woodland.
That looks beautiful.
Yeah, let's go up that one. That raises a golf course.
I love also at the pace that we're walking at, Gabby.
This is a
speedy ramble.
Oh my God.
I've not been walked this quickly on the mile for a long time.
I'm trying not to walk too quickly. I walk so quickly.
Going ahead of the cameraman.
Sorry.
No, it's brilliant. I love it. We're actually getting some exercise in.
This will slow us down. This is one of those hills. There's a loop I do around here. And you get to the bottom of this and you go, oh. But the dogs love it. They just charge up here. It's actually a lot warmer than I thought it was. So
yeah,
I hope I'm not going to spoil continuity.
No. But,
if I see I'm carrying my hands, I obviously had
a... sweating buckets. Traipsing up the hill.
I was having a Greek yogurt this morning for breakfast with berries, but there were no fresh berries left. There were only frozen ones. So I felt like I started the day with an ice cream.
Oh,
and
cold.
I think I made myself cold.
Yeah.
And then you arrived and I was like all ready to put thermal underwear on. And now I'm going, Jesus Christ, it's boiling.
We can slow down the hike a little, keep the temperature level.
Yeah.
Saying that, I'm down with the heart rate rise on this hill.
It's good.
How's the cameraman doing? Hey. Last time we ended up on a hill like this, it was with Denise Lewis.
Oh, right.
She insisted that we sprint up it.
Well, I've got my wellies on today, so...
All the excuses not to, right?
Yeah. I think we don't want to fall flat on our face and have a you've been framed kind of moment, do we?
I think
from a career point of view, it probably gave me a bit of an outer shell of toughness, I suppose, that I didn't really know I needed to be a broadcaster. but I think it probably helped.
You definitely do need. There is, I think the interesting thing about the career path of a broadcaster is there is no direct route.
There's no set career map, is there? It's not like if you want to be a KC, I become a lawyer and then I might become a barrister and then I'll apply for, that's how you become a KC, right? The top of the game in the legal profession.
You have two extremely talented kids. Do you think your competitive edge is sort of worn off on them? And of course with Kenny and his professional career.
Yeah, he'd like to think he's something to do with that. it's quite a competitive house, but the nice thing is everybody's things are their own.
Yeah.
You know? So I wonder how it would have been if Reuben had had a twin brother and not a twin sister. And same for Lois, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all very focused on what they do and they've got passion, and that's the thing I always hoped that they would find, something that fulfills them, you know?
Yeah.
And they get a lot of satisfaction out of, a lot of self-esteem. Yeah, he's playing rugby, he's at Northampton Saints, and Lois is currently on a gap year, but she's an equestrian show jumper and she's the most hard-working person in the whole family, I would say. She's unbelievable.
Trumping you?
Oh, she's like, yeah, she's amazing, but she's got such a brilliant, you know, she would say, I'm sure that she's seen the example around her, and that's, she kind of gets how, you know, what you put in and you get back and the lessons you learn through sport. She's got a real kind of maturity about that. And I really admire her. She's amazing.
As a parent, that must fill you with an immense sense of pride.
Yeah,
Seeing both of your children excelling in totally different fields.
And also facing the challenges of those fields. Because, you know, Reuben is very, very much at the start of his journey in rugby, and he's an academy first year at Northampton, so he's going out on loan, and you know he wants to be running out of Franklin Gardens with the first team. He doesn't want to go out on loan, but he knows that's part of the deal. And so seeing him grapple with that is, and when I say he doesn't want to go out on loan, of course he doesn't, he wants to be with the big team, but he knows he has to learn his trade.
Yeah.
And seeing him kind of work out mentally how to deal with that and how to push on when he's trained all week, and then two nights a week he has to go to Hinckley where he's on loan, then play for them at the weekends, and you know, a fresh set of players and all that that he doesn't really know as well, I think is such a tough school, isn't it? But what he's realised, any professional sporting environment is tough. You know, it doesn't matter where what you're doing, there are going to be days where it doesn't feel like the dream.
Yeah.
You know? And there are days where you just think, oh my God, is this my kind of life now? Because when you've been a schoolboy rugby player and it's all gone really well for you and you've been great, and you know, then there's a reality check, isn't there? And so I've been really proud seeing how he's kind of processed that and gone, these are the days that are going to make me if I'm going to get there. So yeah, it's quite a privilege to kind of have a bird's eye view of that.
Would you say, coming from the backgrounds both you and Kenny have, that you're pushy parents, or knowing the game, you're able to take a step back?
I think what we've tried to do is push when it's needed.
Oh, step, I like that.
You know, and step back.
Because it's a tricky one now. Yeah. I feel like people are, no, just let them do what they want. Yeah. You know, there's this kind of narrative around, being soft and being kind, which of course is important, but sometimes you need a little shunt up the arse.
Yeah, I think.
Or I did.
Yeah, I think you do. And I think actually we're doing our kids a disservice if we think that they just get on with it on their own.
Yeah.
Because what's the point of having an adult around you if not to be able to occasionally give that bit of advice or say, look, the reason why this is happening is because you're doing this. And, you know, if you'll find if you stop doing that, this might get better. Or, you know, you need to have a look at yourself and just think about, are you being honest to yourself? Whatever it is, you know, I think that's, for me, kind of my role, you know. And obviously, when you're younger, you're facilitating. So when they're younger, you're facilitating the practical side of things, aren't you? The lifts and all of that kind of thing. But then, you know, as they get older, you've got to also step back and hope that they start to make their own decisions and things. And you can't push somebody to be a professional sports person. You know what I mean? Yeah. They've got to have their own desire. They've got to have their own will. And that's the kind of rub of it, isn't it? Working out when to push a bit and when to just step back a bit. So
I think there's an art to that.
It's not an art that you... I don't think anybody gets right all the time. We'd both say to each other, Kenny and I, that like Kenny always says that he, with Ruben's rugby, there was a point when he was about 15 where Kenny just decided, right, I'm not saying anything now. Get in the car after training, get in the car after a match. I'm going to let him just tell me what he thought and wait for him to ask me where he could have done better or, you know, and their communication just went like that.
Wow.
You know, and it was really hard for Kenny. He got 70 caps for Scotland, right?
Yeah.
So he would see a training session and go, oh, he didn't do this and he shouldn't, you know. But of course, he's a child, you know. If you can't overload them and kind of give them too much information. I mean, you must have had coaches that were really hard on you, but you look back now and think, oh, actually, that person, was probably quite good for me. Or
I think having the right steer and the right direction. And then in our sport, a lot of it was working out for yourself because there is a huge element of danger.
Yeah.
So it kind of changes the dynamic of the sport a little bit, because if someone tells you, I think you should do this trick off this jump, and you hurt yourself, which is very likely.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of self-discovery. So it's very similar, but there's a slight difference, I think, in extreme sports.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think probably a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Yeah, because you don't want to be responsible for somebody doing something to themselves, which is life-changing, do you?
Yeah,
you
know? Completely. You're a fellow podcaster as well.
Yes, yes.
Midpoint. Have you found you've taken a lot of learnings from doing your own podcast?
Yeah, oh my God, the Midpoint has been... I think we're nearly at 100 episodes and...
Oh, we're chasing you. I reckon this will be like 90.
Really?
Yeah,
really. And we've been always on for the last year.
Wow.
And that's been...
No breaks.
No breaks. So
that is is serious commitment,
Gabby.
We did
do it for the 3 weeks. Not that we would have necessarily not recorded, but the 3 weeks I was in Budapest and Sydney, we did 3 compilations, which I just recorded intros and outros. So we did the best of for 3 weeks.
Oh, cool.
So they were really, but otherwise, all new guests and everything. So the Midpoint came out of an idea kind of pre-lockdown when I was suddenly realizing that at 47, I was in a thing called middle age and I didn't want to be middle aged and beige, right?
So not that.
And I just thought it's about energy, isn't it? You know,
oh, totally.
How you use your energy and how you view yourself and how you keep, you know, there's all sorts of aspects of mind, body and soul, you know, so how you keep yourself fit and what's important to know and understand about the body as it changes, how you feel about life and view, you know, kind of the next period of your life. And also the kind of learnings and the meaning of life, you know, that you kind of at this age start to look around and kind of question, do I want to do that anymore? Is this the person I really want to hang? You know, is this person good for me? Is that person, you know what I mean? All those things that people midlife...
That's such a big thing, is the people you surround yourself by.
Definitely. And it might be acknowledging that you've found a great crew, right?
Yeah.
Or it might be realizing that, certain times I feel... this is not me, by the way, so none of my friends listening need to be worried about this. But one of my friends, I had...
Cut.
Well, I had Elizabeth Day on, and she was just doing her new book, which was about, you know, culling friendships. And my best mate, Kerry, texted me and she went, have you got something to tell me? And I think it's kind of really important, I think, when you have moments to reflect. And midlife feels like a good time to do that, actually. It's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed. People that have come on have been great. And, you know, you do get a lot of, like you probably, I'm sure, with your guests, you come away, sometimes you feel, you know, really inspired, or you feel like you're going to change something slightly, tweak something. They might say something.
Or you've learned something.
Yeah, yeah.
Come away and I'm like, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Would you say that's one of your biggest learnings, the importance of friendship and those around you at this point?
Yeah, I think, funny enough, I'm writing a book as well, which is almost done in the Midpoint book. And the chapter talking about friends and things, who's around you and what you're doing. I think it's definitely this period, you think about it a bit more. I think what happens when, especially when you've had young kids, often your long-standing friends who might not be at the same stage as you, you kind of don't see as much of them, or, you know, you've got suddenly new friends who've got children.
Are in a similar place.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that they're friends for life. Those people might be friends for now, you know?
So that's an interesting one.
Some great people that we've hung out with through Reuben and Lois, who we don't really see anymore.
Yeah.
Because they might have moved on in their lives, as in the kids have moved on. But that doesn't mean that wasn't fun at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice to know those people and be around them. But I think, what's the expression? Friends for a reason, friends for a season, and friends for life.
Oh.
So it's quite, a friend of mine said that to me recently. It's quite a nice,
really nice
kind of way of looking at it, isn't it?
Friends for life.
Friends for life are rare.
Oh, they're so rare. So, so rare. In your current book, you allude to a period of loneliness at Sky.
Yeah.
When you started out in your broadcast career.
Yeah, when I first moved to London.
How important was finding that close-knit community then in the industry?
I look back now, I think, my God, I did have quite a big brave coat on. You know, I came down from Newcastle, 23 years old. I'd done a year post-grad working in radio, doing breakfast show. And I came to Sky, took this dream job, right? And live TV on Sky Sports, got a new show on Sky Sports News.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's like
23.
That surely, at that point, you're like, this is the dream.
It felt like a dream at that month when it was all being offered and negotiated. And I didn't have an agent or anything like that.
Wow.
All of that period was really, we'll slow down slightly because there's somebody there for dog.
Okay. We'll recatch our breaths.
And so that was just amazing. But then I got to my dream location to live. I rented a flat in Richmond. I'd always wanted to live in Richmond. I mean, I'm such an old woman, that's not where most youngsters want to live in London, is it? They want to live in the centre of town.
Not but, me. I'm with you on that vibe.
I was like, I want to live in Richmond. So I rented this flat and I was suddenly in this flat on my own going, I don't know anybody. I didn't have any mates who were in that area, and I had my work, you know, kind of colleagues in my work life. But then I'd come home from work, and especially at the weekends, because unusually I was working Monday to Friday, which in sport is unusual. And Saturday, I'd be like at 7 o'clock, okay, I'll go for a jog around the block, and I'd just be looking in people's windows, and they were having dinner parties.
Oh.
And I got back to order some food, and then I'd sit there on my own eating, thinking, oh, I need to build a life, you know?
Yeah.
Or I'd nip home to Leeds all the time to try and kind of see people. So it did take a time to, you know, but I met some great people at Sky. One of my kind of life friends, Mel Chappell, who you know.
We love her. Melly.
Yeah, I met Mel at Sky. I met some, as I say, some really great people, and started to live a little, because I kind of was coming off the back of university where I'd been, as I said before, I was really busy at university doing loads of things and didn't really have a massive social life. And then suddenly I went to Sky and I was like, oh, I've got some cash now and I've got a social life. So it was a big growing.
So it's a big
really
win, double
so
win.
Apologies.
So just here, we are now entering a zone.
You can hear it squelching.
One of us could potentially fall on our face. I'm loving this. This is a proper walk.
Yeah,
I mean, I did expect nothing less, Gabby, obviously, given the nature of your...
I was going to give us an easier route.
Your competitiveness. No, I'm down with it.
Around the village.
Actually, on the competitive front, and mentioning the word Melissa Chappell, she did have a question that she'd like me to bring forward. And that was, is losing to Kenny on BBC Strictly one of life's greatest... disappointment.
Just being kicked out of Strictly is a disappointment. I mean, the fact that my husband, do you know what? Losing to him wouldn't have been as bad if he'd gone out the following week. He went out 7 weeks later.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had to go every week and clap for him on the front row. You know, when they show the friends and family kind of clapping away?
Yeah.
And I was like that.
Former contestant.
There he is. He still brags about it. Like the other day, Lois had a friend round who would not have a clue that we were on Strictly, right? And Strictly was on the background, and Kenny went, yeah, week 10 now, that's when I went out. And this girl looks at him like, what? And I was like, oh my God, Kenny, let it go. But no, it
so
was...
how long ago was this, though?
Oh, I mean, 2007.
2007. Yeah. Okay, so surely there's a campaign for a rebate.
Yeah. Well,
what are we saying? Is this, is this possible? I missed the 2007. I was away.
Exactly.
So maybe people have forgotten.
Well, my mum said to Anton, my mum got a last minute ticket a few weeks ago, thanks to Melly actually, and she went, and because she loves Strictly, and she said to Anton, I think it's time that you had like Gabby back.
Maybe could we do like a Legends
or
version.
The you know, like the over 50s special, you know, give that a right go. I would, Amy, I'd give that a right go.
This is the campaign, it's starting now.
I was kind of critiqued generally in the public for being too competitive when I was on Strictly. People would say she's too competitive. I didn't think I was being competitive at all. I was like, I'm just training.
I'm getting the shift done. Because it's serious work, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And now I think you probably get more credit for being competitive. Whereas then it shows you how the kind of shift socially in society about women has changed slightly. Because it paid back then to be a woman who was a bit like, oh, what, this old dance? Yeah. You know, it'd be a bit more kind of like, whereas I was like, oh, I'm so disappointed.
Wish I'd seen it.
That wasn't great.
It sounds like great television.
And it was the first week because I thought I deserved more than a 7 for my American Smooth, I think. And I was like that.
Oh my God, amazing.
And James Jordan was my partner and he's like, try to look a little bit more gracious.
Just a
little
bit.
And now I realise you've got to do this. Great. That's great. And then afterwards I go off and go, oh my God.
Would you change your tactics?
Yeah.
Would we see some fake smiles? No, is that what you're saying?
What I probably have done with hindsight is just look pleased whatever the score was and then go in the toilet and cry.
Yeah, that's a good strategy.
Yeah, rather than, you know, kind of like let the public know that I was disappointed. But I don't think there's anything wrong with being disappointed, right?
No, I think showcasing disappointment actually just shows the reality of truth. Why, especially now when we speak so much about being open and honest, should you have to hide your emotions?
Yeah, well, it's a kind of, it is strange, isn't it? That kind of, you know, we go around, as you say, be open. And then actually once people are open, oh, don't be that open.
Yeah.
Don't be that honest. But actually, if you're putting really hard work into something, then you do expect to get something back. So when you don't, you've got a right to go, oh, I mean, listen, we're all, when you do Strictly as a celebrity, you are completely and utterly kind of at the behest of and beholden to those celebrities and those judges, because you know nothing.
Right? Yeah,
So you're just doing what they tell you to do. So of course they're right.
Yeah.
You know, they're not wrong. But yeah, it doesn't mean that you can't be disappointed. Do you know what the thing about Strictly is? When else in your life do you get the chance to actually be with some of the best in the world at what they do?
Yeah.
And in such close proximity for so many weeks, then suddenly you're just like that. And when I say dropped, I'm not saying that in a negative way, but that's what
it's kind of like a sports career, though.
It just ends.
Olympian, boom, done.
Yeah.
Olympics is over.
And you go home, and that night you go, I'm no longer a dancer. I'm no longer that person that I thought I was.
So clearly, this is something that we need to refocus our energy on. There's clearly a few underlying demons.
Well,
here.
I think about it, like as we speak, it is the week that Angela Scanlon went out, right? And she's done amazingly well. And I don't know Angela that well, but I kind of know when we share an agent. And I saw her social media about what a great time she's had. And I was really thinking of it. It's Monday, and I was thinking, she is going to feel so empty today because whatever happens, you still plan your following week. So you've still got your, I'll meet you at the dance studio at 9, you know, and suddenly your diary is
empty. It takes two and there's now nothing. Yeah.
And
brutal.
It's hard. But as you say, the parallels with top class sport are quite
similar.
Quite similar, yeah.
It's a little bit like
just a short,
yeah, a very extreme scale it is.
Yeah.
But the drop off the cliff edge.
Yeah.
Who would you want to partner with if you were to do it?
Oh, well, they've got such a different crop of dancers these days, haven't they? Oh, I mean, everybody loved Johannes, don't they?
Oh, yeah, he'd be good. Yeah. Done.
Yeah. Straight quite tall as well. Usually, I think the taller women tend to go with him, don't they?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Done. That's decided. Yeah. I'm glad. Is there anything within broadcast that you'd still love
this
to achieve?
This is so squidgy.
Oh, wow. This is definitely worth filming us trying to get through.
So you've got to go round the outside.
Okay, you've clearly done this recently.
Yeah, well, the dogs go, I always pretend to the dogs that we're going to go around the outside and they just go straight through the middle of this. So.
That's got to be a nice bit of cleaning for you afterwards.
Careful of these brambles because they kind of like, they do the equivalent of strangling you, but on your foot.
I tell you what, this has been so wholesome for me to escape London and have a sludge around in some mud. You've had an incredible career. We alluded to some of the broadcasts that you have hosted. Is there anything in particular that you'd still love to achieve? Surely there's got to be a Logan show coming soon. I would love that.
I would love that. I always, that's why I started in telly, I think. I wanted to be a chat show host, but you don't really have chat shows anymore. The landscape in TV has changed so much, I think, since when I first started out. I feel really, really privileged that I can still say I've got a career, you know, and that I'm still doing things that are really interesting, and I want to still keep doing a lot of sport. I love podcasting because I get to chat to really interesting people, and it's very liberating, I think, as well, because you can do it on your own, you know, your own time. And you work with a guest, obviously, but you've got pretty much on your own time frame. Where were we?
Logan Show.
Yeah, so let's see. I feel very, very happy with kind of, you know, what I'm doing work-wise, and I get to work with great people, interesting things. So, you know, I'm always open to... Do you know what, the kids being older has also kind of freed me a bit? So I feel like I'll be more interested in things that take me away to do travelogues or anything like that, I think, is really interesting. Maybe do something with Kenny.
Something abroad.
Yeah.
Bit of America. I'd love take that. On that.
I've always thought I'd like to work for... Do you know what? I'm going to pick these up because I hate litter. Sorry.
That's so nice. There's another one there.
I always thought I'd like to work in America for a year or so. Have a year in LA.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Live the LA lifestyle, a little bit of running down there on the beach.
Love it.
Good
walk
coffee.
And the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, yeah.
Just have a really fun year in LA.
That's a vibe.
Yeah.
It's all about manifestation, right?
Yeah. Putting it out there. Get that out there.
However, I have recently seen you in the hot seat on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
Surely that seat would suit you quite well in the future.
Well, apparently all the talk is that Gary's about to sign another new contract. So, you know, that job might well be taken. But I never say never to anything. I've done that show quite a few times down the years. Enjoy it very much. And as I say, with the kids being a bit older, I feel like I can kind of consider those kinds of things a bit more now.
Yeah.
In the past, when I was offered one of the big weekend BBC football programmes back in the day, and I said no because I was... trying to be around more at the weekends for the kids, but also I didn't mind working weekends, but I also knew if I was going away for big chunks like World Cups and things like that, I couldn't do everything, you know. So
open book,
yeah,
bring it on.
Yeah,
I reckon life only gets better after the midpoint.
Look at this.
People, what do you say?
People are just losing things. Like this is a
little eyebrow pencil that'll come in handy.
Soft
handy for me later.
I'm like a magpie, just picking stuff up.
Picking
as we
up
go along.
Gold along our walk.
Why not? Why not?
You don't seem too shy of a challenge. You mentioned outdoor swimming, casual on a Sunday. You've recently signed up to the London Landmarks Half. Do you get a kick?
You're partly responsible for that because...
What do you mean I am?
You said to me at the Great North Run, if you ever do another half marathon again, you should do, you know, if you don't do the Great North Run, which we both love, you said you should do the London Landmarks. It's amazing. And then my agent emailed me a few months afterwards and she said, oh, I've had London Landmarks on. They want to know if you'd like to do. And I was like, oh, this is weird. Because Amy said that is the half marathon
it is,
to do.
It is so special.
So then
special.
You also did it with your mum.
Yeah.
So I said to Lois, should we do the London Landmarks together? And she was like, yeah, so we're going to do it together.
Oh, God, that's so cool.
So you're responsible for that.
That's incredible.
So because she's on a gap year, I thought it'd be quite a nice thing for us to do together before she goes off to uni. I'm trying to kind of grab on to moments with her, you know, so she's kind of...
Wow, that is so special. And what an age to do it.
Yeah, I think...
With her.
I did my first one
for
both of
you.
And it's quite a nice thing to... She's much... Even though she doesn't do as much running and actual training as me, she's on the horse all the time, so she's actually really fit. So it's a bit annoying, really. She's going to be probably leaving me behind.
There's the little competitive edge.
There'll be moments.
It's not about that, though. It's about running together.
Yeah.
No, like, honestly, I recently did New York with my mum, and it sounds as if we do these things all the time. We don't. We've done two marathons together. The best bit about it is the fact that throughout it, in those moments where you're like, my legs feel like they're going to fall off, you know, my mum's toe, her foot, it's actually just being there together and sharing.
Yeah, those moments together.
Yeah. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there with my mum. So we'll see you on the start line.
See you there on the start line.
Yeah. Producer Tom also wanted me to ask, is this part of your training so you can join us on the running presenting team of the Great North Run?
Tell producer Tom, not a chance in hell. No, I mean, huge respect for you for doing that, but no. I think I'm best just stood there waiting for the guests to come and see me. But I did think there's also part of me thinking, you know, I'm always doing those kinds of shout outs to people saying, you know, catch to 5K and all those things.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I do lots of exercise, obviously, but actually, it's good to put yourself back in the mix, isn't it?
Yeah.
And do something like that. I did a big bike ride recently with Kenny for My Name's Doddy Foundation, which is a fight for a cure for motor neurone disease. And he cycled from Edinburgh to Paris and I joined in at Marlow. So that was a bit of a challenge because I hadn't done any cycling for years. So that was
how many miles was that for you then?
So the longest day for me was about 80 miles.
That is a serious shift.
Yeah, it was. You know what the thing about cycling is, great on your body because you don't really have that pressure on your joints, but you have got to do a lot of it to feel like you're really getting the.
Yeah.
Or you have to do around here. It's very hilly, as you might have seen. So it was good to get lots of hills in.
Gabby, I have to ask you, as we ask everybody on this podcast, what is your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
I love Mondays.
Yeah, schedules in place.
Yeah, I understand why people get a bit of Sunday blues, right? But I actually, because I've worked weekends so much, I often try and leave Monday a bit clear.
A bit of a mellow day.
Yeah, and so, or catching up with my kind of life admin day as well. So I actually really like Mondays. I'm not kind of a Mondays
blues.
Hate
to
No. So Mondays feels like bring it on, you know?
Yeah.
Feels like, come on, that's another
week.
What are we going to do? There's another week here. Let's see what we can do with this week. Let's see what we can kick the backside out of this week.
We've definitely brought it on strong with this walk. How far have we walked?
I think it's roughly, this loop is about probably 4k.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
I reckon this is the furthest we've ever walked on the mile.
Oh, there's
a
competitive streak is really
brilliant.
Secretly happening.
Let's see if Jason Carl Fox, who's on next.
Oh, Foxy did Kenny's bike ride.
Oh, there we go.
So, yeah.
All of the random mutual connections.
I'll just say one thing about Foxy. If you cycle behind him, you never have to worry about any wind because the man has lats like
wings.
Yeah. I just used to sit behind him and the Peloton worked beautifully. I'd just be cruising along. So yeah, it was great.
And lastly, Gabby, are there any life mottos or quotes that you live by that you can share with our listeners to help them get up and be the fittest version of themselves at the midpoint?
It's not an original one by any stretch of the imagination, but and more I feel like that, and I remember hearing this in assembly from a headmistress or headmaster when I was about 14, what you put in, you get out. And I feel like that is so true in all aspects of your life, in all areas of your life. What you put into your relationships, what you put into your friendships, what you put into your work, what you put into your hobbies, what you put into your sport, you get back. If you skimp on those things, if you don't put the effort in, you're not going to get the results you want. So
you're going to reap the rewards.
Yeah, and I think it's important to think of it not just so much of the kind of the stuff that's out there at the moment in terms of positivity and mantras seems to always pertain to business and, you know, kind of wealth and things like that. And actually, the most important things are your relationships. And then the other stuff can all grow from that. So I think, you know, as somebody who's been married for 22 years as well, I would say, which is the longest romantic relationship I've clearly ever had, is what you put in, you'll get back.
That is so beautiful. And I absolutely love that.
Oh,
I feel
you.
Very, very aligned with those same values. People are everything. Monday Mile listeners, I really, really hope you enjoyed that one. Gabby Logan, wow, what a trailblazer. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Amy. It's been great to walk with you.
And you know what to do. This podcast drops at the early hours. So if you are an early riser, plug in and go for a stroll. Money Mile listeners, it's a wrap.